Hello and welcome to the Label Sessions Presents podcast. Label Sessions is the world's leading innovation expert network. In this series, you will meet some of the most interesting leaders anywhere, from across the worlds of business, design, tech, culture, and sustainability, all signed to the Label Sessions roster. To find out more about our work, helping brands and institutions around the world take on their big challenges for the future, head to labelsessions.com to find out more. For now, enjoy the podcast.
Winston, thank you so much for taking time to sit down and talk to me. I do appreciate it. We know you as somebody who's a CIO, CTO, all those wonderful acronyms. But I feel like you could best introduce yourself to kick us off. I'd love for you just to tell us a little bit about your story, your work, and where that takes you to today.
Thanks, Josh. I studied engineering at the University of Toronto. Upon graduation, I worked in the consulting industry, technology consulting with Accenture. I was at Accenture for about 7.5 years, great experience, got to travel the world. You know, I was on the road 285 hotel nights a year for like 7 years straight. So that was interesting, but I got the travel bug during engineering when I did a 1 year co-op term. And I got to work in Korea and Amsterdam, and I thought this was a great opportunity to kind of travel more and be in tech. So I was at Accenture for 7.5 years. I decided I needed to kind of settle down, so I went to another consulting firm at Ernst & Young. I was there for about 5.5 years. Still traveled, just not as much. Wanted to get into, move away from the large program transformation type work into more CIO advisory work, tech strategy, that type of stuff. I was there for about 5.5 years. My last 2 years at Ernst & Young, I did a lot of IT M&A work for transaction advisory services. So representing buyer side or seller side, but still kind of on the tech side of things. On a personal front, I got married, I had one child, it was time to settle down and get off the road. So I joined, I went to financial services, I went to industry. One of the largest banks in Canada, TD Bank, that was back in 2016 when I kind of my introduction to the data and analytics space. I was there for about 2.5 years. There was a major life insurance company here in Canada, Sun Life Financial. They used to be a client of mine when I was consulting. And so they thought, we had built a great relationship throughout the years as a consultant client type partnership. So I built good relationships there with the senior executive team. They had asked me to come from TD Bank, move over to Sun Life to help them in their kind of cloud and data and analytics journey. So I made the move to Sun Life because I always had really good experiences working at that organization and with their people. It was just a really good environment. And so joined Sun Life. I was there for about 14 months and we basically achieved everything we wanted to achieve in those 14 months. So it was a super accelerated journey there. I was speaking to some, introductory or like kind of early on companies who are getting started with their cloud and data and analytics journey at a conference and at an AWS conference, and kind of one casual conversation led to another. One of those up and coming customers in the cloud space, they asked me if they basically offered me a role to kind of lead data and analytics, enterprise architecture, and the corporate systems. It was a major telco here in Canada. So I decided to take that senior leadership role at this telco. I spent about a year and a half there. It just wasn't right. It wasn't the right role for me. It wasn't the right company for me. Let's just say that from a cultural perspective. So I only spent a year and a half there. From there, I went to a software company. A company that has its roots in Sweden. So I had a lot of my team members based in Europe. That was a really good experience because at that company, I kind of reconnected with somebody that I used to work with at TD Bank. And so, you know, I jumped at the chance, at the opportunity to work with this individual again, just because I had such fond memories back when we were at the bank together. And so, you know, I was at the software company, at Click for about 2 years, before I decided that, you know, it was time to, and I felt like I needed to be in a role that had more of an impact to society. So I decided to join a nonprofit cancer data and analytics company based out of Montreal, Canada, and, you know, applying kind of what I've learned over the years into something that actually has a larger societal impact. And so I've been at that organization as their chief technology officer since September of 2003. But fast forward to today, I'm still kind of a fractional CTO at that nonprofit organization. But my focus right now is I lead the enterprise data services organization at Workday in California.
Fantastic. Hell of a journey.
Yes, it has been.
And one of the things that I'd love to ask, especially for someone like you who's had so many different roles, so many different experiences, is I guess, which were you personal when you sort of saw the time to settle down? Do you see each of the different roles that you have as individual sort of eras, for lack of a better term, or do you feel like they all have a sort of cumulative experience?
I would say it's been it's a cumulative experience, but also it does follow like a certain pattern. Because so coming out of school, working in consulting, my first 7.5 years of my career at Accenture, I was part of the data center technologies and operations practice. So at that time, back in 2003, 2004, when I first started working at Accenture, that was the hype of the, what you call the virtualization era or trend, right? A lot of organizations were looking to reduce their physical footprint, whether it be in the data centers or server space, and VMware had come onto the scene, and it was definitely a trend that was picking up. But, you know, I would say I've worked mostly outside of Canada, which was interesting. So I worked mostly in the US, Europe, Asia. And so a lot of the organizations that I was worked that were my clients, they were all kind of going down that path of trying to virtualize everything. And then when I moved to Ernst & Young back in end of 2010, early 2011, that was when cybersecurity started making a more pronounced kind of there was more of a pronounced investment in cybersecurity at the time, right? And so that was another trend, which is why I also kind of like delved into the cybersecurity space. And then obviously mergers and acquisitions have always been a part of the business landscape. And so I thought that was a great opportunity to kind of like up level and broaden my experience and skill set, which is why I ended up running IT M&A for the last 2 years of my career at Ernst & Young. But, you know, throughout this, data and analytics, data science, that was kind of like the new trend that was coming on the scene. And so when I moved into the data and analytics space at TD Bank in 2016, that, you know, I think, again, it was like following a major trend in terms of like where the investments were going, where companies were kind of doubling their investment in. And so I think my career so far has kind of followed a trend in terms of like what's emerging and what are the areas that are most important to organizations. But at the same time, also kind of like for my own personal development, consulting set like a great foundation for everything that I've done up to date. And then being in Canada, the major industries here, finance, insurance, healthcare, telco. So, personally, it was, you know, trying to get exposed to those four major industries.
Going from that, obviously you say that data analytics is sort of a through line, and then you have the sort of waves of, you know, virtual machines and then cybersecurity. I'd love to talk to you a little bit about what is it that excites you right now in your field, and what opportunities do you think will emerge from, or challenges from that'll show up in your work, say at Workday?
I think think the most exciting thing right now is basically generative AI, right? Like how generative AI will change the way we work, the types of work that existing teams will do in the future. And it'll change the operating model of how teams function together within an organization, right? Though that's definitely top of mind for myself and my peers, whether they be in Workday or other organizations through my network. I think another thing exciting or something that organizations start thinking about is when it comes to generative AI, right? Like it's all, the output is only as good as the input that you provide. And so, you know, I think a lot of people in this current era, data science is the cool thing, right? The cool kid on the block. But I think what people fail to realize is that linguistics is actually equally important, because if you're not able to articulate a problem statement, or you're not able to articulate a question, right? Different question, the way you ask a question kind of dictates the output that you're going to get. So if you don't ask a question in the right way, you might not get the response that you're expecting. So that, you know, linguistics, language, that all kind of ties to like the whole concept of prompt engineering, which has a huge play with Gen AI. And then, you know, like I said, with Gen AI, you know, how it'll affect operating models, right? There's, I think more organizations will start to kind of look at how you operate with an organization, especially between the business functions and technology or IT. The whole discussion around centralized versus federated operating models or hub and spoke, like that type of conversation has always been a topic of discussion. But I think it's just going to be a little more focused. I think it'll just be a little more kind of talked about as we move forward in this Gen AI journey.
One thing that always that's really fascinating to me is, you know, you mentioned prompt engineering. It's something that sounds so simple on the surface, but it's definitely quite interesting, the fact that you're right about the output that you do, that you, the input that you give is the output that you get also. But it's a case of how do you even know what questions to ask if you don't know where to start, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then I was thinking from there is, obviously the industry that you find yourself in terms of data analytics and the industries that you've been in the past is, what questions do you think leaders should be asking themselves right now? And what shifts do you think that it has for them to make? It doesn't have to necessarily be about generative AI.
You know, as a leader and, you know, as I talk to my peers and other organizations in my network, I think a lot of the top of my questions right now is, do we have the right skills for the future? Do we have the right balance of roles and functions between onshore and offshore, right? And when I say offshore, I don't necessarily mean contracting out to a third party. I mean kind of actually setting up office locations and teams in lower cost geographies. Just because of like the whole macroeconomic situation, a lot of organizations are starting to be very conscious of how they spend their budget when it comes to resourcing. And then how do we up our game around addressing privacy and security concerns as AI becomes more proliferated? And so I think those are things that, at least for me, are kind of in the back of my mind, things that I think about on a regular basis. And then I think in terms of like what makes me tick, if you will, is, I get really excited when, you know, I don't even know how to describe it. I've had only a couple of experiences or where this has happened. And I'll give you one example. When I worked at Sun Life, we had a fairly large team, about 150 people, that was global across Canada, US, India, and Ireland. And we all understood what the mission was. And so everything was just very smooth. Like the way we worked together, the way we understood each other, we just worked well together. by virtue of aligning on the mission. And so that is something that I kind of look for every chance I get, is to get into that same mode, that same rhythm. And then, you know, another thing that really makes me tick is people, you know, watching people develop personally and professionally, right? Like it actually brings me kind of a lot of joy when I see people kind of moving up in their growth ladder, so to say, both on a personal and professional front. You know, I love it when people get recognized for their work. I think a lot of times, you know, I would even say for myself, I'm not somebody who goes out and purposely tries to market the work that I do. I'm that type of individual that, you know, if you recognize the work, great. And if you don't, I'm not going to go out there and try to like make you see it. I'm not, you know, I'm just trying to like let the work speak for itself. But sometimes I think you need that person who's going to kind of advocate for you and make sure that you get recognized for your work. But I love it when I see people get have that opportunity. And then I think another area is leading, you know, being able to lead the charge on work that addresses a gap. And so, because from a working style perspective, I personally don't like doing things for the sake of doing things. I like doing things because there's an actual purpose and objective, and it's going to fulfill a particular gap. So I would say those four areas are definitely things.
Fantastic. And recognition is a really, really important one, yes, because it is, like you say, it's a fine balance between, you don't want to pander to every little action because that could be inherently demotivating in a sense, but you do want to recognize those big milestones when they do crop up when appropriate, which is really, really important.
Exactly.
Awesome. And speaking of like the personal growth that you see in people, I'd love to talk a little bit about your own and talk about what advice that you would have for your younger self where you are today.
You know, there's a couple of things that come to mind. You know, one thing that I have learned over the years is don't worry about the things that you have no control over, right? And I think early on in my career, I was trying to make a name for myself and trying to be out there within the organization that I was at, especially in consulting, right? Consulting, you have to kind of stand out above and beyond 100%, right? And so for me, what I learned though is like if you start worrying about things that are out of your control, you kind of end up not accomplishing what you intended on accomplishing, right? And so like if you focus on just the things that you do have control over, I think it makes you more focused and it makes you more deliberate, and you realize that, you know, if you address that incrementally, you eventually get a lot more done. That's definitely one piece of advice that I would have given myself earlier on, rather than, you know, the years that it took me to figure that out. But, you know, also another thing that I wouldn't change about myself is I've always been very kind of like thoughtful in terms of my actions. And so, you know, measure twice, cut once. I would say I am a planner. But I also would say I'm not a, you know, I don't plan to the nth degree, right? Like I don't plan so much that I end up not taking action on anything. And so I think it's important to be thoughtful and important to make sure that you try to address as many risks before you execute on something. I think being thoughtful about the work, but also about the impact that you have on the people that are going to be affected by the work, I think that is also super important in anybody's journey. The other thing is change through, you know, what I call change through example. If I were a good teacher, I'd probably be a teacher, but I'm not a teacher. if someone were to say, we need somebody to teach a class on something, I'm not going to be that person. I just don't have that particular trait within me. But what I do have is basically influencing by example. And so, you know, if I say, if I have like personal kind of like guidelines within my belief system, and so then I kind of I I I, sh- I I share that through demonstrating through my actions on a daily basis. And you know, I kind of just like, I hope that when my teams see me act a certain way, that they're going to also feel like they should be comfortable to be more transparent and to take ownership and just basically leading through example, really.
Three really good points there. The one that I find that speaks to me the most was the idea of to your very first point, where, you know, trying to worry about things that you can't control necessarily, because it leads you to that sort of, you know, stasis of like decision paralysis, where you're just like, there's so many things that you can think about that nothing happens as a result.
Yes.
You get that sort of overcrowded sort of mentality.
That's right.
One final sort of question before we get into our quickfire questions of bringing it to sort of the wider scope and what you think for the future is, when you look around the industries that you're in and working in the wider world that we're in, what opportunities do you see to really reinvent the way that things are done?
What I would say is something that I don't see as like, I would say is game changing, but I wouldn't say as innovative. And so what I would, my answer to your question is really around if organizations, and of course this is easier said than done, right? Because some of the organizations are like so large, right? And so set in their ways that this would be a very difficult task. But I think if organizations all kind of took a look inside of themselves and made an investment into process optimization, into looking at the way at how they operate internally today, and you know it, and then figure it out, made the investment and put the time and effort into revisiting how they work today and how they could potentially optimize or optimize the process, remove duplicate steps, that type of stuff. I think that that would go a long way in terms of finding efficiencies, both from a resource perspective and from a cost perspective in the long run. I studied industrial engineering at the University of Toronto. And so process optimization was always part of like the curriculum as an industrial engineer. And so, process optimization has always been something that has been front of mind of like manufacturing companies, right? Like this is how you got into like all the concepts around like Six Sigma methodology, right? And finding ways to make things better all the time, right? Like it's not just process optimization at one within a year. It's process optimization from now to end of life, right? Perpetual. And so I think if organizations put the time and money into starting that type of like initiative and then maintaining that initiative, I think there would be a lot of benefits that one would experience from that. But I think it's like I said, easier said than done, because it does take a lot of time and a lot of commitment to kind of focus on that particular area. But another thing, process optimization, another reason why it is hard to do, it is also because it's tied to human behavior. And that's another aspect of like another area where organizations, I believe, are struggling. Some organizations are struggling. And I don't know if you've ever come across this author by the name of Patrick Lencioni. He is the author of The Five Dysfunctions of a High Performing Team, right? And so when you have those dysfunctions of an organization that are, prevalent, that's always going to impact the ability to optimize processes, because the human behavior side of things kind of takes over, right? Like the lack of trust, the lack of accountability, the avoidance of like conflict, like those type of things will prevent an organization's ability to kind of really dig deep into looking at where can we improve, because it ultimately will have an impact on people's roles and how people do things. But, I think it is kind of a chicken and an egg thing.
I mean, I know that you said that it's not necessarily like a super innovative thing, but it's definitely a thing that's really important, and definitely something that's a unique answer for this podcast, because it's something that's, again, can be seen as deceptively simple, but it's something that everything really needs to be pointed towards.
Yeah, for sure. It's not a technology problem, right? Like technology, I think, is like, 25-30% of the problem of the puzzle, right? That larger proportion of the challenge is related to people and process.
And that's a wonderful place to leave it for in terms of our main questions, but we'll get into some maybe hopefully fun ones in terms of the quickfire questions. So we'll kick us straight off. Could your friends explain what it is that you do?
Some of them, the ones who have been in this type of industry themselves. Yeah, I would say only some of them.
And what would you want them to say, if so?
What would I want them to say? I think there's an acronym that I've always, there's an acronym that I actually have inscribed in the inside of my wallet, and it's three letters, GSD, and it's get stuff done. And so, you can replace the S with the other four letter word, but that's something that, I would want, that's something that I would want people to say about me, but also I think people already do say about me is, if you need something fixed, if there's a crisis, or if you just need something done, they think of my name.
You've given a lot of really great advice over this last sort of half an hour or so, but what is the best piece of advice that you yourself have ever been given?
I think it goes back to the thing about, worry about the things you can control. I'm gonna also kind of introduce another four letter acronym here called TOFU, which is take ownership, follow up. So if you're going to take accountability for something, like make sure you see it through, and you drive it to ground, rather than kind of like half-assing the effort. You either do it or you don't do it.
On a scale of 1 to 10, and this is the last question, by the way, this is something we always ask everyone, so buckle in. On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the most, how weird are you, Winston?
I would say about 7 to an 8. I'm pretty self-aware. I'm pretty self-aware, and I've always been, since I was, younger. So yeah, I have quirks about me. I have OCD tendencies. I was never like formally diagnosed when I was younger, but I'm sure, I have a bit of ADHD, and I definitely have like tendencies that would be classified as weird. I don't know. That I would classify as weird.
Well, that's a solid number and a solid place to leave it. So thank you so much for your time, Winston. I do really appreciate it. But it's been a real pleasure meeting you and talking to you.
Yeah, likewise, Josh. Thank you.
As we close out another episode, make sure to like, subscribe, and follow us on our social channels. Want to access Label Sessions for your brand? Whether you want to build new products, access world-class mentors for your team, or reinvent the way you attract talent into your business, visit Label Sessions to find out more.